Direct from 95 BFM, it's Friday Live, thanks to Parrot Dog Beer.
Tom Rodwell, are you on the phone?
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I am on the phone. I'm good. How are you?
Kia ora, mate. We're fantastic. Whereabouts are you? I assume you're in Tāmaki Makaurau somewhere?
I'm in sunny Grayland. I'm within striking distance of Grayland Park.
Oh, beautiful.
It's been a while since we've had you on the show, but last time you came up and played a Friday live session for us, it sort of stands out in my mind as a fantastic live session.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I remember it was a really good one. I think I had Damien playing percussion with me. Possibly, yeah.
Nice.
No, so it's always a treat to make music in the studio there. It's a room with a lot of memories.
Mm.
Right on.
Now, you've been pretty busy. You've just put out an album today called Wood and Waste. Tell us about the genesis and the recording and everything that went into this album.
Well, if you've seen my quote-unquote band Storehouse at the various venues in the planet that we've played in, we tend to be kind of doing various versions of traditional gospel music or blues music or calypso music and that kind of material. But I haven't actually released a record of original material, and although I put out kind of oddball things here and there, a record of actual sort of quote-unquote songs hasn't come out. So I've been meaning to get around to that, and it took me... I had a lot of material but I hadn't kind of formalized it. And what I have always loved is working on analog tape and on old-fashioned kind of ways of doing it. And, you know, of course, the trendy thing these days is, well, not the trendy thing, the best thing to do is make records. When you start with making a record, you've got to go backwards from the format of the actual disc. How many songs can you get on the disc?
Right.
If you make it too long per side, it sounds kind of, literally the end of each side sounds less bassy. So there's a problem with too much material. So that means I had to decide, like, literally what 20 minutes per side can I put together. So that was a really good editorial process because, you know, when I play live, I don't really have any boundaries. I just play as much as I feel like. And then this was a good way to be tight and kind of muscular and go, all right, what does it mean to do 22 minutes per side?
That's sort of a start, a middle, and an end.
Basically, yeah, and kind of also like how do things connect? How do they, you know, what's the? Do you want too many? Do you want a lot of groovy songs on one side, or do you want a lot of slow things on the other? You know, or how do you mix it? And I love that way of thinking about music. That's about the format.
Yeah, that's the cool thing about vinyl. It has like an automatic artist direction in the sense that you've got to fit it all in there. And like you say, the lighter songs, if people go back and listen to albums from like the 70s and stuff, you'll find that there's usually like an acoustic number, like you say, right at the center, because it can't handle the bass frequency too much. And a lot of songs will just be that studio roll off of the volume, like classic fade out. You know, not many people kind of doing that these days, but it was just a reality of getting your music out there. You know?
That's right. And then there was also the thing, my suspicion that a lot of albums were kind of like the hits and then filler.
Yeah, totally, you know? Totally. Yeah.
And so that going back from the format was really great, and that led to a wider sort of sense of having rules and having discipline about putting it together. And one of the tasks I sort of set myself was, could I do it entirely on tape and stay on tape? Because if you want to get really nerdy about it, something I've always found bizarre is if people make an LP and it's actually come from digital files.
Right.
You know, and that is, there's nothing wrong with that, but you can certainly tell the difference between, I mean, I bought an LP by Cass McCombs, a really great contemporary American dude, and I played that next to, or like, alongside an old Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass record, Right. And Herb was so much punchier.
Out of it.
You can't believe it, you know? And then I think there's a lot of integrity about staying in the same kind of chain. Part of the buzz was to stay with tape and to see how far it could go. And I know what people are going to be sitting there thinking.
It's a bold move, for sure. I mean, you've definitely, in that stroke, it's a good idea, but also a real bad idea.
But is it? Because, you see, I've also done the other side thing where we've gone with digital stuff, and it's been like months and months of revisions. And messing around. And I feel, and I've certainly heard digitally made albums that are dynamite, there's no question, but there's a lot of them that are that go on and on and on in the actual production process. And I think there's a risk for musicians who the famous kind of stories of people going mad in the studio in the 70s. You could do it the same way with computers. A lot of musicians will be sitting there going, well, you know, it would be nice to do it on tape. How can you afford to do that? But how can you afford to like constantly be working on stuff for years? So the neat thing about the going to Roundhead is that, sure, it's expensive, but the clock runs out and you've got to make it count, and you got to go, you know. So we didn't have the luxury of retaking things, and fortunately most of the music I made there was with Chris O'Connor on drums and percussion, and we just nailed everything in a couple of days. And then I got to come back and mess around and overdub and things like that.
A very Neil Young approach, like let the band be the band, and then a few sparkles on top without any editing in between.
And my other big kind of informing thing was this obscure band from Liverpool called the Beatles. I mean, they had
never heard of them.
I think one of the recipes of quote unquote psychedelia is like when the Birds did it too, and the Doors and all those LA bands and San Francisco bands. It's essentially like straight ahead folk rock, but with one really weird thing in it, or two weird things. Like, it's got a keyboard, but it's going through a wah-wah pedal.
Right.
And I love that simplicity that you can do with analog recording. Because Roundhead, if you stay on tape, they've got, you know, you've got lots of channels, but not that many. So your choices are pretty restricted. And absolutely, you can go off to lots of crazy effects, but you really want to stay with the classic ones. And so that meant that the we got to play around at doing kind of some little Phil Spector-y type things as well as psychedelic things. Panning, but also the big secret with if you ladies and gentlemen, if you did buy the LP, you'll hear on a number of places there's a lot of really delicious what they call microphone bleed or signal bleed, where Jeff Henderson's playing the marching drum on a number of the songs, and you can hear his drum being picked up by my vocal mic. So there's this weird kind of and my vocal mic was going through a plate reverb unit.
Brilliant.
So there's this kind of it sounds almost like a Def Leppard snare drum.
Is that downstairs at Roundhead, like a big plate reverb?
No, that is somewhere in the basement.
He's
got a series of those.
The cool thing about bleed and analog recording for everybody sort of listening is it just adds like a whole glue to the situation. It's as you would hear it live more than if you're trying to mix individual things that are completely isolated and then try and marry everything together. Half of the job is essentially done, like you say. Like if it sounds good, it sounds good. You know, so you can you can afford the bleed, you know.
And it's very easy to, obviously, it's very easy to cook it up. But I certainly did that. But we lucked out, and I had a couple of friends, a guy who was visiting from the UK called Raphael Mann, who's a producer, and he was there to sort of, he works mostly on tape anyway, and he was there to help kind of just sort of position things and keep a check on dynamics, because that's important. Chris on drums is an important kind of character in it as well, because if he's way too heavy or if a drummer is way too loud on the snare drum, it's going to leak everywhere. So you
got it. It's worth saying something in the moment rather than just going, oh, no, it's okay. And it's good having that guidance of someone that sort of knows the art.
Yeah, and sort of say, hey, let's move back 3 feet, and can we move that amp over there, and let's turn that. And there's so much of that.
Yeah, you're thinking about so much anyway, so it's cool to have someone sonically thinking about that stuff, because you would have a lot on your plate trying to cut this all in a couple of days. Sounds exciting, man. I can't wait to listen to the whole record. So it's out already?
It's out. It's out today.
Today,
yeah.
So
I managed to get... So Flying Out have some stock. JB Hi-Fi have stock.
Mint.
Marbex have stock.
Mint.
And I'm still working on the... there's a bunch of things that are being picked up by the courier to go down to Wellington. And so
good stuff. And you've taken the time to record a track for us off the record, which we really appreciate. Is this...
Thank you.
You're in your bubble. Is this kind of you soloing? Or
This is me soloing, but it's just because I'm... because I may as well play with my toys. It's going through
two guitar, appreciate it.
two guitar amps, and also the kind of the little sort of tremolo type sound that you hear is the Leslie speaker. The guitar is also going through a Leslie revolving speaker, so the sound is sort of flickering and spinning around a little bit on the guitar. So this is a song called, if you're going to cue it up, this is one called...
Good to go.
It's called Make Believe, it is on the record, but this is a Greyland special.
Kapai, man, we'll fire away.
Cheers.
From Tom Rodwell, recorded in Graylin.
When was that recorded? Yeah. Like today or yesterday? Or
that was 10 a.m. I tried to do it. Oh no, 11 a.m. I did a version yesterday and it had lots of pretty, like birds tweeting away and stuff like that. But I kind of wanted to do another version, so there we go. I've got a little 2-year-old son, so it's not easy to find the time to
sure.
crank it out when your quote-unquote home studio is over the corridor from his bedroom.
Now, Tom, for the album, what did the process look like after you've recorded it at Roundhead to tape? What are the steps in between getting it to vinyl?
Well, this is the fun and games where, as I was talking before about kind of the logical inconsistencies of record making, you know, like people put things out that are digital files on an analog medium, or even worse, people record on analog and then they convert it digitally.
Yeah, right. So you had the tape masters, I assume you've got done somewhere here, maybe like Stebbings or something like that, or?
No, well, I've worked with Stebbings in the past, but they can't master from tape. They can, but they can't.
They can give you the tapes, but then you need to get the tapes to a record place that has the same tape player, right? That's kind of where it starts getting tricky.
And even further on, you've got to, like, if you work backwards from the pressing thing, they use a lacquer to make the it's called the father disc and then the mother disc and then the stampers that they use to create the actual things. But the lacquer itself, how do you get the lacquer? And what happens with the majority of mastering engineers is that they use these kind of digital delay things so that they can check that that they're not overdriving or overcooking from the signal, from the tape or from the digital, from the album, onto the lacquer. That is all well and good, but for a certain kind of purist mindset, that's converting it to a digital format just at the last minute.
Right.
And what it is possible to do, there's one person in, I think there's one dude in Germany, there's a lady in London, and then there's a couple of people in the States, and I found one of them, and he's called Kevin Gray, and he's in LA, and he will actually cut the lacquer live from your tapes.
Awesome.
So I was able to post the tapes, and Jordan Stone, my engineer, he basically sliced and diced the master half-inch tape tracks, the best takes, and we turned it into an A-side and turned it into a B-side and put it in the post, and off it went. And he played it and cut it. Obviously, the issue is with a lot of bands is whether the music has the kind of live straight through element, you know, like if it's the same dynamics basically through the album. If it's a big dub record, I'm sure it might be, or like a techno record or something, it might be different. But so this guy mostly works with like Blue Note Records and the Beach Boys and stuff like that. But he also does like Madonna, and
right.
So he's anyway. It's a very nerdy thing to do, but it meant that the whole chain is what they call AAA, is analog, analog, analog at every stage, and that I'm not going to say that hasn't been done for a long time because that's nonsense. It's, you know, someone like Peter King vinyl in Geraldine. He was, you know, people of course were sending him tapes, and he was making discs from that, but. What I've done with this album is kind of an unusual retro thing that used to be in the industry standard.
Yeah, you must have learned quite a lot of stuff along the way, and you garner a lot of respect for the records that have come before. I mean, I'd assume that it's been harder for you than it would have been in the actual day, because you are working against, you've got to double check everything, like you said, like that little process where there's a digital delay. It's like, well, no, wait, just can you read my email again? I don't want any digital.
Well, and also have the guts to kind of trust.
Totally.
That Kevin's ears would be on it, and his gear was all, you know, beautifully maintained and everything. So, you know, there's a lot of I don't want to brag about it. It was kind of gutsy, but it was also like just methodical.
Right on.
That's the other way to put it. Yeah.
Well, it's good to know you can do it, and that there's an avenue.
And also a really great little news angle is I don't know if you remember Lion Rock is Hi-Fi.
Yeah.
But Josh from Lion Rock has just started a mastering facility in Pihar called Downbeat Mastering, and he is setting himself up to do analog mastering as well.
Brilliant.
So yeah, in Piha, maybe he. So there may be like the fourth or fifth dude in the world who can do it will be in Auckland.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, that's a really good news story. So
good stuff, yeah. Man.
And oh, I will hold my hand up that it was kind of, you know, let's say nerdy, but I don't actually think that it was more expensive than staying in the analog domain, because Kevin, you know, he charged what mastering engineers charge, but I certainly know of a certain couple of people in Auckland who charge more.
Right.
So the amount of money you might spend sending tapes to another country is also what it costs to get it sent to Tedderangi.
Do you have to do different masters for the digital realm, like Spotify and stuff like that?
Or? Yeah, well, Kevin grabbed it at the... So he's got a special kind of pickup on his turntable when he's cutting the... or whatever it is, on the lathe when he's cutting. And I think the pickup picks up the a digital signal as well. So he mastered it digitally at the same time.
Brilliant.
So, yeah. And obviously people are going to be like, hey, what is the damn point in this? And
well, actually, that's none of their business, mate. You paid the money, and it's your fucking record. So
it's my record. Yeah, but also, I think I could answer it. I could answer it. And it's the because years ago I recorded on wax cylinder.
Oh right? God! Fuck the OG. Do you even know anyone that's got something that'll play a wax cylinder? I was thinking about wax cylinders the other day.
I saw one. Believe it or not, there's a little antique shop in. The O'Reilly Basin train station.
Oh, yes.
And he's got a player.
That's John's neighbourhood, actually.
Right. But there's a guy in Sheffield, and he can record in the same way that Thomas Edison did. And
you're a maniac. So you actually released something on wax cylinder a while ago.
Yeah, it was my first quote unquote single. And that was 30 copies, and it sold out. You know.
Far out. I'd love to have one of them. That's so rad.
I can't find my copy. But
yeah,
anyway.
No doubt. That's the thing. Where do you put it? You got to put it on the shelf. Pride of place.
But what you do is you sing into the horn, the recording horn. That's like the gramophone horn, just in reverse.
Right.
You have to make that. With your voice or your guitar,
yeah,
make that vibrate. That makes a little disc or a little diaphragm vibrate. That in turn makes a little needle vibrate, and at the tip of the needle is like a tiny piece of sapphire, and that vibrates. So you're essentially kind of making these you're making these shadows of physical vibrations.
It's especially what they used to do back in the old blues days out in the cotton fields. Like people would go out with that in the boot of their car, and they'd open it up, and someone would just be in the middle of like basically being a slave. And I'd be like, "Oh, old mate can actually play a guitar really well. Do you want to record him?" Like, "Yep, okay." Next thing, you know, he'd just
had it in the back of the car.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
rad,
but you're making a kind of instead of it being a digital is a good metaphor for digital is like a sort of a snapshot of a sound, but. Analog recording is like I don't want to say a sculpture, but it's a physical. It duplicates the dynamic shifts, louder and soft, more kind of in the same shape of the sound. And I think so. Therefore, like the analog recordings, to me, it feels a bit more like. When something is loud, when you hear Ringo Starr playing a loud drum kit, it feels more like the sensation of being near that drum kit when it's on an analog chain. But that's absolutely subjective as well, and I know that...
no, man, stick to your guns, man. I think you've done a great thing here. Wood and Waste, obviously you can get it around the place. We've got a track up here off the record.
Thank you.
But how many... I assume it's like... eight or so tracks.
There's nine songs on the record, and it's 42 minutes long, and everyone's a banger in a different way. And
I've been hearing good things. Yeah, sweet.
Obviously, the way to listen to it is on vinyl.
Yeah,
I would say that. But
and make sure you got a good record player. None of these fucking little weird ones with the battery powered bullshit at the park crap.
Yeah,
they will ruin the record.
Exactly. Or but feel free to. Go onto your friendly neighborhood spot.
You've done all the like. You know that it's at this stage. This you're just listening to all the analog that you've put into it. So listening to it on Bandcamp, there's no shame in that.
That's right. And a nice piece of entertaining nonsense is that There's a bunch of guitar synth parts on there, but the only computer involved in the whole thing was the laptop that had the samples that the guitar synth was playing. And but those samples are of the Mellotron, which is itself...
You're not going to get one of them. Yeah, that's a whole other tape. That's a whole other tape issue.
Exactly. But those samples were digital samples of the original analog Mellotron sounds. So it's this weird kind of snake that eats itself.
Yeah, you know, they do actually have a Mellotron at Roundhead Studios, but I think it's pretty tired. I think it needs a birthday, but I mean, it's the type of thing. Mm-hmm. If anyone doesn't know what a Mellotron is, it's basically like a keyboard with tape loops on each key. So it's very, very hard to keep running.
He's got a contemporary digital kind of knockoff.
Right.
And then those old ones. The older ones are called the Chamberlains. And they were like a competitor to the Mellotron. But yeah, they're pretty fun.
Tom, it's been totally awesome chatting with you and discussing the process here, man. Mad respect.
Thank you.
I really, I've seen you play a few times and it's just been totally awesome. So I'm really glad that you've released a record.
The main thing I want to point out is that even though this has been a very, very nerdy discussion, the actual music is not serious.
Yeah, right. Okay. Calm down, everyone. Okay, now take a deep breath.
Yeah, so the song hopefully we're going to hear is She Got Me Boiling, and this is kind of like if you know Calypso, then this is soca. This is the fast version of soca, and I thought, you know what they need in Trinidad and Tobago music? They need, like, lots more crazy guitar solos. So this one is...
No,
like,
argument there.
It's like fast dancehall, but with, like, a couple of guitar solos in there as well.
Sweet, bro. And I'm seeing here on your Bandcamp that you're playing December 4th at the Tuning Fork? Is that going to happen, maybe?
I don't think that's going to happen. Yeah.
I've seen you at the Wine Cellar a few times, so I'm sure you'll be back there at some stage.
I'll be back at the Tuning Fork when we can do that, but I don't know when that's going to be. Thanks for reminding me to update my website.
That's all right. Figured you're not a digital LP guy.
And if you want the LP, ladies and germs, buy it from tomrodwell.com as well, because then you'll assist me in not going bankrupt.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, mate. Thanks so much, man. We really appreciate
it. All right. Enjoy. Thanks.
Here it is. She Got Me Boiling.
She chopping me in two.
Friday Live on 95 BFM. Thanks to Parrot Dog Beer.